Welcome to New World Notes, edited by Kenneth Doust. Today we'll take a look at some of the unreported casualties of war. Among these are many of our own soldiers. And in the majority of cases, we can't pin the blame on any alleged evil Muslim terrorists. Male and female, our soldiers are being raped by their fellow U.S. soldiers. Others are dying by suicide. Maybe we should say they're all being raped by the system. And of course, in sheer numbers, our GI casualties are dwarfed by the civilian casualties we cause abroad in our apparently global war zone. We'll catch up on the war news with reports from Dave Lindorf, Alyssa Rorick, Roy Zimmerman, The New York Times, and David Rovics. I hope you'll stay tuned. Our corporate mass media and our government tacitly conspire to say as little as possible about the horrible pain and suffering caused by our supposedly noble wars. The very little they do say on the discomforts of war focuses on our own soldiers, almost never on the people at the receiving end of our hellfire missiles. Today, I'm going to be guilty of that imbalance myself, I'm afraid. Information from Pakistan and Yemen, free of our government's self-serving lies, is hard to come by. But here's a nice piece by independent journalist Dave Lindorf. It was published in late January in Counterpunch, soon after President Obama's second inauguration. I've condensed it a bit. One quick note first. Back in the late 60s, we had an anti-war chant addressed to President Johnson. It went, "Hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?" Remember that? Short and very much to the point. Dave Lindorf titles his essay, "How Many Kids Have You Killed Today?" Here it is. I personally found the president's inaugural speech not just insipid, but disgusting. It reached its gut-turning nadir near the end when he said, quote, "We the people still believe that enduring security and lasting peace do not require perpetual war. We will show the courage to try and resolve our differences with other nations peacefully. Peace in our time requires the constant advance of those principles that our common creed describes: tolerance and opportunity, human dignity and justice." Unquote. Lindorf continues, as he spoke, U.S. factories were turning out, under Pentagon contracts, fleets of drone aircraft that daily are raining explosives down on innocent men, women, and children in countries the U.S. is not even at war with. Most of those drone attacks are personally approved by our Nobel Peace Laureate president. He has claimed the right to order the liquidation of anyone he deems to be a terrorist, and the liquidation of anyone, even children, who happens to be in the vicinity of such a person. The result of this policy of state terrorism has been a wretched criminal slaughter of children, a slaughter that has been hidden from view and denied wholesale by the Pentagon and the president. To borrow from the president's style book, we the people have been complicit in ignoring this wretched slaughter. We the people, who cringe in horror at the slaying of 20 innocent first graders in Newtown, Connecticut, don't spare a thought or a tear for the thousands of innocent children killed in our name by our heroic forces in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Libya, and elsewhere. Killed by our presidentially targeted drone aircraft in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia. Killed by our weapons in the hands of allies and rebel fighters we support in Syria, Gaza, the West Bank of Palestine, Somalia, and elsewhere. Just to try to make this monstrous crime by the president clear, here is a list compiled by the organization Drones Watch, a list of children, some as young as 1 and 2 years old, who have been documented as killed by U.S. drones. They are listed by name, age, and sex in that order. Sidebar comment, I'm going to read just 20% of this list. I'm going to skip over the 97 children our president killed in Pakistan. Here are the 25 children our president has killed in Yemen as of January. Back to the text. Yemen. Afra Ali Mohammed Nasser, age 9, female. Zaida Ali Mohammed Nasser, 7, female. Hoda Ali Mohammed Nasser, 5, female. Sheikha Ali Mohammed Nasser, age 4, female. Ibrahim Abdullah Makbel Salem Lukwe, age 13, male. Asma'a Abdullah Makbel Salem Lukwe, 9, male. Salma Abdullah Makbel Salem Lukwe, 4, female. Fatima Abdullah Makbel Salem Lukwe, 3, female. Khadija Ali Makbel Lukwe, 1, female. Hana'a Ali Makbel Lukwe, 6, female. Mohammed Ali Makbel Salem Lukwe, 4, male. Jawas Makbel Salem Lukwe, 15, female. Maryam Hussein Abdullah Awad, 2, female. Shafiq Hussein Abdullah Awad, 1, female. Sheikha Nasser Mari Ahmad Bua, age 3, female. Maha Mohammed Saleh Mohammed, 12, male. Sumaya Mohammed Saleh Mohammed, 9, female. Shafiqa Mohammed Saleh Mohammed, age 4, female. Shafiq Mohammed Saleh Mohammed, 2, male. Mabruk Mukbal Al-Qadari, 13, male. Dela Nasser, 10, female. Abdelghani Mohammed Makut, 12, male. Abdulrahman Anwar Al-Alaki, 16, male. Abdulrahman Al-Alaki, 17, male. Nasser Salim, 19, sex unreported. That's the end of Lindorf's list of 25 dead children in Yemen alone. As Lindorf notes, 20 murdered children in Newtown, Connecticut, national calamity. 122 murdered children in Pakistan and Yemen, who cares? Plus, who knows how many children in Afghanistan, Somalia, and God knows how many other countries. In that list of 25 children from Yemen, one name near the end might have stood out. Abdulrahman Anwar Al-Alaki, age 16, male. He was a native-born United States citizen. Born August 26, 1995, at 1:16 p.m. in Denver, Colorado. That's according to a photograph of his birth certificate that I have seen. We killed Abdulrahman while he was having lunch with his Yemeni cousin, age 17. A week earlier, Obama had killed his father, the cleric Anwar Al-Alaki, also a U.S. citizen, with another drone. Well, while we're on the topic of U.S. mayhem abroad, missiles dropped from the sky, let's hear a new poem by David Rovix. Or maybe it's a song. It's about our 11-plus-year-old war in Afghanistan. And it's about this odd quirk the Afghanis have. No, not bachabaz, that is, dressing up young boys to look like girls, then using them sexually. That is indeed an odd quirk, but not that one. No, the poem is about their quirk of disliking being invaded and subjugated by distant foreign empires. We're still distant foreign empires with a radically different culture and religion from their own. Well, as Art Linkletter used to say, people are funny. If you listen closely to David Rovick's poem, you'll catch some references to the fine Canadian progressive folk singer Bruce Cockburn. Cockburn has composed some powerful anti-imperialist, anti-war songs, like If I Had a Rocket Launcher. But Cockburn was recently praising the gallant Canadian troops fighting against evil over in Afghanistan. What the heck? These noble Canadian fighters for freedom included Cockburn's brother. So maybe that's what knocked out Cockburn's moral gyroscope. Only temporarily, we all hope. Anyway, David Rovix is calling Cockburn out on this ethical lapse. But the poem isn't mainly about Cockburn. It's about the people of Afghanistan, and resistance, and bloody Western imperialism, and this insane and never-ending war. A war the purposes of which have never been stated by the aggressors. That's us. It's called The Comets of Kandahar.
Twin Towers came down in 2001. Bush said Bin Laden must pay for what he'd done. The Taliban offered to turn him over to a court. But the USA said to them, we'll have nothing short of an imperial invasion by imperial command. We'll bomb your villages, steal your land. Your children can cower in fear just before they die, as the comets of Kandahar are streaming through the sky. We'll overthrow your government and put there in its place a kleptocratic oil man, a national disgrace, who can bleed your country dry, make sure your people pay, while we kill innocent civilians every single day. With missile strikes from above the clouds and F-33. And we'll call it liberation. We'll call it democracy. We'll send the death squads out to kill you if you dare to question why, as the comets of Kandahar are screaming through the sky. As your nation crumbles, as the rubble turns to dust, as the Russian tanks and helicopters blacken with the rust, as the children die and their parents take up arms to defend their dignity, their religion, their cities and their farms, Canadian crusaders will meet the fate of ages, facing men who say of them, as the battle rages, if I had a rocket launcher, some son of a bitch would die, as the comets of Kandahar are screaming through the sky.
We haven't said nearly enough about the harm the U.S. military machine is doing throughout the world. Still, let's switch gears and talk about the harm it is doing to its own citizen soldiers. In mid-March, this serious and pretty well buried issue of military rape finally got some wider publicity. That's thanks to a public hearing held by a subcommittee of the Senate Armed Services Committee. That hearing was convened by the subcommittee's chairman, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat of New York. Here's the story from the New York Times, March 14, which I will read in part. It goes, "Veterans testify on rapes and scant hope of justice. Senate panel criticizes response by military." By reporter Jennifer Steinhauer. Washington. Choking back tears and in voices edged with rage, two women and a man who served in the American military told a Senate panel on Wednesday how they were raped by superiors and then ridiculed or ignored by military officials from whom they sought help. One of them spoke of a rape she endured during her first months of service, and another told of a sergeant who stripped naked and danced on a table during an official sexual harassment training session. After spending a year repeatedly harassed, Rebecca Havrilla, a former Army sergeant, deployed to Afghanistan from 2006 to 2007 and was raped by a superior a week before returning home. Quote, "I chose not to do a report of any kind because I had no faith in my chain of command," unquote, Ms. Havrilla said. When she sought help from an Army chaplain, she said, he told her, quote, "The rape was God's will," unquote, and urged her to go to church. The Pentagon estimates that roughly 19,000 service members are assaulted annually. A small fraction of the incidents are reported because most victims fear retaliation or ruined careers, and only about 10% of those cases that are reported go to trial. One in three convicted military sex offenders remains in the service, something many policymakers want immediately corrected. One victim, Brian K. Lewis, a former petty officer in the Navy, said he wanted to bring attention to male victims of sexual assault, who he said are often overlooked. Mr. Lewis testified that he was raped in 2000 by a superior officer, and when his command learned of the crime, quote, "I was misdiagnosed as having a personality disorder," unquote. And so ends the story. Let me add that the majority of rapes in the U.S. military is male on male. That's because the military is overwhelmingly composed of men. A woman soldier is much more likely to be raped than a man soldier, but in sheer numbers, the majority of rapes are by men of men. I think our soldiers' experience pretty well confirms what feminists have been saying for decades. Rape is not a crime of uncontrolled erotic desire. Rather, rape is a crime of violence. It's about power and control and subjugation of another person. What is the relationship of U.S. soldiers in the Middle East to the people of the Middle East? It's about violence and power and control and subjugation. See the parallel? And purely within the U.S. military, what are the characteristics of the military bureaucracy? Well, perhaps a bit less violence intramurally, but it's still all about power and control and subjugation. Yes, sir, it is. In its essence, military rape is not an aberration. It's just one particular manifestation of the structure and the mindset, and indeed the main job of the whole enterprise. Violence and power and control and subjugation. That's what we train them to do to the Arabs. Make those towel heads feel some shock and awe, damn it. If you start respecting the humanity of your fellow soldier, hell, where will it end? You could end up respecting the humanity of the people you're raining bombs down on. Then how are you going to do your job, huh? Well, let's move on from rape to even worse. Soldier suicides also have been getting a little publicity. Here's a good article on the subject by Alyssa Ruricht. It's from Counterpunch, March 22, 2013, and I have condensed it a bit for radio. It's called Soldier Suicides. Here goes. Suicides in the U.S. military reached a record high in 2012 when 349 active duty soldiers took their own lives, about one every 25 hours. 349. That same year, 301 U.S. soldiers died in combat. For the third time in 4 years, the military had more suicides than combat deaths. And the figure of 349 suicides may be too low. 110 reported suicides are not counted, as they're still under investigation. The actual sum could be 459. That's just active duty soldiers. In veterans, the numbers are far worse. About one veteran every hour takes his or her life, according to the VA, the Department of Veterans Affairs. Sidebar comment, the precise figure is 22 per day. Back to the text. Since these data were released, the VA has increased its mental health staff. The VA claims that its new crisis line has saved 26,000 lives so far. But the VA is treating the symptoms of the crisis, not the cause. That there are 26,000 veterans that need saving from suicide shows that something is very wrong. The causes should not be too hard to discern. For one, consider the incredibly long and repeated deployments by U.S. soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. In World War II, the average infantryman in the South Pacific spent about 40 days in combat over 4 years. 40 days. That's compared to today, when about 107,000 Army soldiers, or 20% of the active duty force, have been deployed three or more times since 2001. Over 50,000 soldiers have done four or more tours of a combat zone. Sidebar comment, during the Vietnam War, a soldier might be required to wear a uniform for 4 or 6 years. But as I recall, a soldier spent only 11 months of that time in Vietnam. Why? Because the Pentagon knows that more than a year in combat damages the minds of their own troops. Back to the text. Consider also our schizophrenic way of rallying behind the troops with patriotic chants and support our troops bumper stickers. Yet when our troops come home, we leave them homeless, jobless, penniless, and without health care to nurse their physical and psychological wounds. An estimated 62,600 veterans were homeless on a single night in 2012. 1 in 10 veterans lacks health insurance. That's 1.3 million veterans without benefits. Of the lucky veterans that do get treatment by the VA, 30% have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. More than 247,000 veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars have been diagnosed with PTSD. Troops who have been deployed multiple times to Iraq and Afghanistan are more than three times as likely than other soldiers to suffer from PTSD and major depression. The author continues, finally, let's consider that this country has been deeply drenched in wars throughout the world for many years. The war in Afghanistan is in its 12th year. It has been 6 years since the U.S. stepped up fighting in Somalia, 9 years since we began bombing Pakistan. And those are just the wars most people know about. Our troops are deployed in 120 countries around the world, including throughout Central Africa, across Latin America, and in the Philippines. Our global hegemonic empire extends into 60% of the world's nations. So how could anyone be surprised at the high rate of suicide among our active duty soldiers and our veterans, who are forced to fight in deployment after deployment in wars spanning the globe? Wars meant only to increase our dominance and global sovereignty. Troops who come home to joblessness, homelessness, and no one to help them with their internal and external wounds. The wrong questions are being asked in this country. The question is not, how can we better help our vets and soldiers combat depression and suicide? The question is, how can we cut ourselves off from the incessant need for war and conflict and global domination? This country is addicted to war and violence. That is the source of our problem. It is time we changed the conversation. That's the end of a nice article by Alyssa Rurecht. And let's go out with Private First Class Roy Zimmerman saying pretty much the same things. Thank you for listening to New World Notes. Hear us again at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, we wish you Illegitimi non-carborundum and peace.
I was gunning for Osama, and you sent me for Saddam. Thanks for the support. And I just sat down to dinner. It's another can of Spam. Thanks for the support. You say, complete the mission. And I say, count on me. 'Cause I don't even know what mission there might be to abort. Thanks for the support. You sent me here a third time, and my house was repossessed. Thanks for the support. Now my wife is in a trailer, but she sent a Kevlar vest. Thanks for the support. And I think of her only every time I bleed. And someday we will meet again at Walter Reed, the resort of last resort. Thanks for the support. You hired those mercenaries who make eight times what I do. Thanks for that. And you showed up on Thanksgiving with a turkey and a camera crew. Thanksgiving. Now you're giving guns to the ones who shot at me. The tank is full, but the strategy might be down a quart. Thanks for the support. And I appreciate the stopgap, and I appreciate the surge. Thanks for the support. Another 20,000 voices to harmonize this dirge. Thanks for the support. And to the Democratic Congress who could have sent me home, who must have come down with a new Gulf War syndrome of some sort. Thanks for the support. If I die tomorrow, won't you ship me home at night? Thanks for the support. And if I have a funeral, make sure it's out of sight. Thanks for the support. In the final seconds, you've got a plan to win. It's cut those taxes and let Jesus put one in from half court. Thanks for the support.